everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today I am so excited to welcome Daniel Bernard to our show. Daniel and I have air quotes known each other for some time now through LinkedIn. And we were laughing before we started recording that we've actually never had a one-on-one conversation. And so I'm a little bursting with excitement. So if I'm a little overzealous on today's show, I'm just so excited. You're such an, truly are an inspiration to me. And we'll get into all the reasons why, but welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Shauna. You flatter me far too much. Let's leave the judgment to the end of the hour and see how it goes. But yeah, I'm more than delighted to have our first actual one-on-one in front of your audience. So let's see how that goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm just taken away by your posts and your material and your content as well. So I can guarantee you that I'm going to flatter you back 10 times more than you can manage to do with me.
Well, thank you so much. You're in for a show, folks. So Daniel, let's give folks a bit of a context first to set the stage. So you are actually joining us from Tel Aviv, 9 hours ahead of where we are, where I am. So again, thank you for making it work in your day. You are a sports industry investor, entrepreneur, strategist. And as I said, you post some great work, some great content. We actually met each other. I had to think back to it because I was kind of forgot, but through Rob Thompson, who's also in the sports and tech and entrepreneurial space. And so shout out to Rob. Thank you so much for bringing the two of us together.
Thank you, Rob. Indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. So give people an understanding of a bit of your evolution to the seat that you have today. Like, it's clearly been a journey, lots of learning, and I'm sure different forks in the road along the way. But, you know, we talk so much about evolving, you know, throughout the platform and the impact we're looking to make. So I'd love for you to share with the audience. What does that look like in your world?
Okay, sure. So I'll try and keep it short and speak for no longer than 4 hours about myself, and then we can move on from there. So I was born, as you can probably hear from the accent, I was not born in Israel, I was born in the UK. And I lived in a few places. I've lived in five different countries, actually, and worked, lived, which is always a fantastic education when you not just travel through places, but you work and live in a place, and you get to see life from a very different perspective. And I think that one of the key learnings for me, and you say it's been a journey, continues to be a journey, is to understand there's always a different perspective. And if you have the privilege of living in different places, which is why I'm having an argument with my wife, I'm trying to get the kids to live in other places, and she just wants them close to home all the time. But, we'll see, I'm gonna lose, obviously. But I lived in Italy for a while, and I had a business in France, which totally failed. That was my first business. And I thank God for that every single day, because that was what led me to eventually Israel. And and I've been in Israel now for coming up to 23 years, which is quite a while. And I'm not moving again. This has been my home for 23 years. It's where I've raised three children. And I love this place. But, you know, I can list a lot of things that are very complex about this place, but I can only have an immense gratitude for what this place has given me. And when we think career-wise, so I had, the trigger was that failed business in France, and I was left with no money. Went back to the UK with my tail between my legs. My arrogance definitely got a knock on the head, thankfully. And I remembered this girl I'd sort of been seeing, and you know, who came from Israel for remotely. We'd seen each other a little bit here and there. And I said, what the hell, let's go for it. So I went and took a one-way ticket to Israel in 99, and that woman has today been my wife of 22 years. So I'm very, very fortunate.
I love that story. Thanks for sharing that. That's so cool.
Well, it just shows how if that business hadn't have succeeded, I wouldn't have made that step. So it was a real early lesson for me of how we only ever see a tiny little tranche of life. Mm. And if we realize that there's so much out there that we don't know that's going on and that could go on, then it helps us, I think, open our eyes to new possibilities. And so my career, really, since I've been in Israel, I worked a bit in the sports industry before that as well, when I was living in Spain, which was the other country. And I started here after getting by for the first couple of years. I got a job, very luckily, in the sports TV industry. And if you work in media and broadcast in sports, it gives you a great overview of how sports works, because you see how the the sporting event takes place, how they manage the venue, the sponsorship, how the production teams go in, uplink it to satellite, how the viewer engages with it. So you get to see end to end how sports work. And that was key for me. So I had 3.5 years working there before I left to set up what became Redwood International Sports, which is a sports data and analytics company. And for I set that up with my wife, by the way. We worked together for 8 years before she realized she can't, you know, that was about enough. So I think the fact that we remained married after 8 years of working together is quite an achievement anyway. We focused on, I call it football, you call it soccer, only for about 9 years before adding a few other niche sports to really break down what was going on the field of play and look at performance in a different and very new way. And that's been my anchor ever since, basically. One of the verticals we worked with was, if you've got good maths, good analytics, then the sports betting industry is going to be all over you. And so we were a vendor into the sports betting industry from about 2006, 2007. And that was really the cause for our expansion over those years. And then I was approached in 2015 to set up for other people sports betting platforms for emerging markets, subcontinent, Latin America, those sorts of places. And I thought it was an odd approach, to be honest, because I said to them, I don't have any experience. I'm only a vendor of data into sports betting. And they said, oh, don't worry. And I understood later that it was quite deliberate. They wanted someone that came with a complete blank sheet of paper, wasn't affected by a blueprint of this is how it's always been done. And it worked out very, very well. And I had to deal with product. I set up a product team in Kiev, which of course those guys had a 45 strong product team in Kiev, which those guys are quite dispersed now, yeah. Because of everything that's going on. It's great, it's still going on, but just remote working, let's say, as an extreme. I dealt a lot with compliance to make sure the regulatory framework. So I learned a hell of a lot. And I realized in 2020 that I'd once again had the fortune of setting up a company from scratch. And I realized that that's what I'm pretty good at. But after that, there were a million people better than I am at scaling up. And so I took a step back, moved to the board. We got someone to take it to the next level. And then it was the beginning of COVID. It was 2020. And I sat there thinking, what now? And I started investing into sports technology. And so I've been an investor into sports technology just for the last 2.5 years or so. And that has given me a very wide view of what's going on in the tech sector and how it can deliver to sport. And that's been great. And even though I will say I'm an entrepreneur at heart, I'm not really an investor. I just sort of, you know, I do invest, but I don't really, that's not my dharma, if you like. I'm much more a founder and entrepreneur. I need that roller coaster of life. So I'm always looking for the next thing. And I'm actually starting at the moment a new venture that I right at the beginning. So I hope that will succeed. Watch this space. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. Watch this space. You'll have to come on and tell us more about it. No, but I really appreciate you sharing, you know, what you did, because I think a lot of times as leaders, we can be really hard on ourselves, no matter where you are in your career, that you have to know where your next step is, or if something doesn't work, then it's a failure and it can feel really soul crushing. And I think that as I'm hearing your story, there's an element of things happen for reasons that you may not know at the time. And a lot of those, again, that's why I talk so much about evolving, because through each experience, it was like it was a bit of a catapult to your next experience, to, you know, like, it's like an onion peeling kind of thing, like peeling away the next layer, revealing what the next thing you were going to learn, do, grow, build. And even when you talked about your experience with your, you know, in the early stages with your wife, it was like, you know, dare to take risks, step forward, the courage of things. And then, you know, rather than just getting on our heels and being like, I'm never going to get to the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at it, I mean, anyone who's had a career over a number of years will tell you that you can only map it backwards, can't you? You can't. Yeah. I can say in 99 when I moved to Israel, well, I'm going to work for the sports broadcast company, then that's going to lead me to this. I mean, of course not. Right. I can look back and I can tell you how one step led to the next step, led to the next step. And that's, I think, a key understanding, is that you don't want to plan too far ahead because you have no idea. Yeah. I'm not saying don't plan, don't just wing it and see what happens, but keep yourself open to the idea that you really do not know. It's like walking down a road that you can't see what's down the side roads.
You
only see as far as your eyes can see. And that's really, really important. I had actually a guy who worked for me until about I think it was about 6 years ago, something like that. And at the time, he'd been working with me for about 10 years. And the last 3 years, he had got to his ceiling, and you know, he knew there was no career opening at my place. And I was very transparent with him. And I said to him, listen, as long as you're doing a good job, you're welcome to stay. But for you, go and spread your wings, find something, because you're worth a lot more than the position you've got. And there was that difficulty of accepting that there's maybe a risk stepping out of a comfort zone. He'd been with us for like 10 years. It's a long time. And he, you know, every 6 months he'd come and have the same conversation with me. You know, maybe there's an opening. No, there isn't. What should I do? And in the end, I said to him, look, the trigger was he came to me with someone had made him an offer to be a partner in a new business, but he didn't have to put any capital down and he could get a salary, which was pretty comparative to what he was earning with me. And he came to me for my advice and he said, can you look at the executive summary and see what you think? And I looked at it and I said to him, I don't think this is going to work. And I think you should go for it. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, I said, this is just a stepping stone to the next thing. You've got no risk. You don't have to put any capital down. Okay. I said, and he was like, yeah, but what happens if it doesn't work? I go, so then something else will work. And I was so adamant with him that I looked him in the eyes. And I said, do you want to come and have the same conversation with me in 6 months? And then 6 months later, and then 6 months later. And that was all. And he resigned 10 minutes later. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy when about a year later, he told me that I was right. It didn't work. But because of that, he then got a really good head of product position with another company. He was delighted. Right. And so it was an example of how you just do not know. And if you're in a position where you're thinking, I said to him, do you want to keep having the same conversation with me? We've been doing this dance for 3 years now. Yeah. And he goes, no, you're right. Yeah. And so, come on, get out.
Yeah. And I just want to pause to the audience. Like, I want to celebrate for a moment. Like, that's leadership. And I think that so many times it's easy to get caught up in the moment and like, I don't want to lose this person. This person might be so good for the business, but I love the way you stood back and you're literally thinking about what's best for that person's journey. And what does that person need to get out of their own way and allow themselves to keep moving forward in their own journey, you know? And so I really appreciate that you shared the story, also that you clearly had an impact in that person's journey. And then, you know, that person's evolution, then, you know, they moved on. And I love the fact that you were like, that's not going to work, but go take it anyway, because we learn so much from experiences that don't work, you know, then all the time thinking every single thing has to be a win, a success for, you know, for us to continue on and everything. So that's awesome.
Thank you. No, I mean, we learn most from our failures and our negative experience, without a doubt. Everyone says it, but it's so true.
Yeah.
You know, if I find someone who's been working 20 years and has never failed, I'm really questioning that, to be honest. Yeah. It doesn't make sense to me. So maybe they're, you know, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. You can't really go through. Learning from other people's mistakes is genius if you can do it. I mean, it's fantastic if you can do it, but no one ever learns to the same extent if it's not at their own expense. I know that from my own expenses.
I know so many times when I'm talking to people, I a lot of times like share experience that I went through with either like I made a mistake, screwed something up, or it was, you know, adversity that I found my way through. Because sometimes I'm like, learn from me so that you don't have to go through the experience that I did, you know, but it's so true. I mean, I look back at when I had been laid off, when the pandemic hit and sports entertainment just, you know, shut down and I lost my job and I had been there for too long. I'd been there 9.5 years and I wasn't coasting in the situation, but I should have moved on before then. And in the moment, it was so hard of like, what the hell am I going to do? You know? And it was less of the loss of that particular job and just that holy crap, you know, like in that moment. But I look back and I am so grateful for all of it, because who I am today as a business person, who I am today as a human, I just have evolved so much from the Shauna of yesteryear kind of thing, you know? So just, you say, you know, they're like these, I'm actually so grateful for, for that experience. And no, it wasn't easy, and it's still not easy, but you know, it's just part of the journey.
That's it, exactly. And we are always just in the middle of our journeys. I think some people feel that, oh, my journey has ended till today, because that's all they know.
Yeah.
Realize you're just in the middle. There's like a whole extra bit over here that we haven't explored yet. And so when you think about that, it's like, oh, there's so much more to learn. I know I'm going to look back in 5 years at who I am today and go, huh, I didn't know that back then. It's just the way things are, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. So I have a question for you though, because a lot of times when we talk about having this, like, you know, frame of mind when it comes to the path forward, and that it's not this like regimented 5-year plan and I know exactly what I'm going to do next. When we talk about it, it makes it sound easy and stress-free, and then there's no anxiety in it. And I'm, you know, I know that there's definitely times where I'm like, I wish I had a crystal ball. I don't know what's next. And I think from proving myself to myself from that experience of, you know, over the last several years, I'm able to lessen my anxiety about not knowing what the next thing is. But I'm curious, in your experience, has it been, did you have more anxiety of that in the beginning? Were you trying to figure out what's next, or has it, you know, and now what helps you to keep that mindset of almost like trust that you'll figure it out?
Well, so I think when I look back on how I was at the start, I'm not sure it's a choice, to be honest. I just have, if I think about my biggest asset, is that I don't fear uncertainty, whereas most people do.
Yeah.
But it's a natural thing. It's not like I woke up and said, I'm going to make sure I don't fear anxiety. I can't tell someone to be like that if they're not like that. And I'm just so thankful that I'm like that, because that allowed me to just go and do things and see what happens. Whereas, and I think when I look back at it, maybe when I was younger, it was partly a mixture of naivety, maybe stupidity. And thank God for that, because it allowed me to do things. You know, when you get a bit older, you're a bit wiser and you think, well, I shouldn't be doing that. And so you'll stop yourself by your own wisdom. But when you're younger, you can go and do things, and it might be the stupidest thing in the world, but you never know. It might also be the best thing in the world. Yeah. And so my natural lack of fear for uncertainty has definitely been something is one of my strongest assets, I think. I don't actually know how to do many things, but that naturally I'm very good at. And I see that most people are not like that. Most people have a natural fear of the unknown. And then I try to talk to them, but again, it's a psychological thing. You can't convince someone in one conversation, Daniel said, don't fear the unknown. No worries, I'm going to do that now. It just doesn't work. It's changing a mindset is really, really hard. So I think that I was just fortunate, and that's why I was always very entrepreneurial, tried things, failed. No worries, you know, even though I was gutted. I mean, it wasn't like I was not completely broken. I totally was. When I had no money left after that French adventure, I was, and I was cut down to size as well. I all of a sudden realized that, hey, hang on, can't just make everything work.
Yeah.
And sometimes just that's what happens. And it's funny, I look back on that, by the way. I found during COVID, we were doing a lot of cleaning up, and I found what I called my business plan for that. I was only 23 years old. It was just a to-do list. It's hilarious. I mean, I saw all the mistakes anyway of a first-time entrepreneur. But then you say, how do I keep it now? You know, there's no doubt that if you've got a certain amount of financial stability, which thank God I have now after some successes in business, that allows you to be more of a risk taker. And, you know, as long as you're controlled, it's always going to be harder if you're tight, trying to make ends meet. And then you've got that extra stress. And, you know, when I took those risks when I was younger, I didn't have kids, didn't have any responsibilities, you know, so it's much easier. I'm in awe of people who go for something they really believe in, and they don't have a financial buffer, and they've got kids to take care of and a mortgage to pay. And you think, wow, that's amazing. I don't know if I'd have been the same in that position.
Yeah.
And so when I had to take risks early on, I didn't have those responsibilities. And nowadays, if I'm taking risks, they're calculated, and I'm in, you know, a financially stable position. So it's easy to do it when it's not that admirable when you're sitting pretty, basically.
Yeah. No, but I even appreciate this conversation, because sometimes when we'll hear people talk about these who are in a situation like you, it makes it like everybody can do this, and this is accessible for everybody. And I think there's a really just a refreshing realness to be talking about. There's almost like this threshold that people have, and it's very unique to each person's background, their just psychological makeup, their the way they whatever makes them tick, that they may be more risk averse than others. And, you know, different people's situations can really help them along in the way. I mean, I think it's really helpful to talk about the reality of that. I think, you know, at the same time, if people are listening and that's like, you know, you know, sometimes you actually want to be more of a risk taker, you want to put yourself out there more, and so I think it's also helpful to see that someone has been able to, you know, kind of ride that wave of growing, evolving, doing something, screwing it up, starting back over. You know, because I often use this, I said sometimes I often, which is probably pretty accurate, which means I say it a lot, is that, you know, I think we often suffer similarly. And you know, again, just is the human condition kind of thing. And so that's, I think, what's so important about sharing these experiences that people can really relate to and, you know, learn from and continue the growth.
Hopefully. But everything's very individual.
Yeah.
And that sometimes on platforms like LinkedIn, I'm not on any social media apart from LinkedIn. And you see these posts, they annoy me a little bit, where they speak to the public, the whole LinkedIn public, and say, yes, you can, or something, you know. It's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at.
Individual, not, you know, not everyone can do that. And not everyone has the attitude or the aptitude to do that.
Yeah.
Some people are different at different things, or everyone's different at different things. And these posts that sort of like, in a blasé way, just like spread the love. But it's also, you know, it drives me mad, that sort of thing, to be honest.
Yeah. I think there's just a little, it almost seems like out of touch where, and then it becomes like completely, you know, you can't relate to something like that. So, which actually brings me to another part where we open this up talking about like your more of the, call it, traditional part of your working world, where you are, again, like in investing, sports tech, that kind of thing. And when I was looking at your LinkedIn prepping for this, like it says that's what you talk about, right? So that's what you talk about on LinkedIn. And by the way, folks, if I haven't said it before, I love Daniel's LinkedIn posts, and I literally like look for them because they have so many great nuggets. But what comes across to me, not only that those are the things that you're talking about, but you also have this incredible awareness, self-awareness, awareness of others, communication skills, this ability to meet yourself and others with grace. Like even from the example that you just gave, it's a little bit of like having a mirror up to yourself as you're going about your journey and the way, and as you're communicating. And then the other thing that really sticks out to me is it seems to me that you're on a quest to constantly learn, which I think is, you know, I can definitely relate to. And you've talked about your, you know, mindset and adversity as we've gone through this. So, you know, I'm kind of curious, where did that element of Daniel come from?
Which one?
right. I know which one. Well, what I mean is that way of thinking and operating where it's not all about you. And there's so much of that, like awareness of others and how it's like how you're operating in the ecosystem. So I'm curious where that could have come from.
Yeah. Sounds like your dog wants to join the interview.
I know, right? Here goes. Folks, this is what I do. I throw treats to Petey to keep her from barking.
Okay. So, where does it come from? I mean, first of all, I try and be more and more aware. I mean, if all, you know, through my life, and I'm 47 now, so I don't think I was always that aware. I think it's a process. I think if you ask my wife, she'd say that I'm completely unaware. You know, it depends who you ask. I'm kidding. Okay. I hope I'm kidding. But I think my greatest love people. I take an interest in people.
Yeah.
It's everything for me. It really is. I love meeting new people all the time. Never get tired of it. I love going to conferences and talking to people. And I can identify quickly if it's someone that I just want to have a surface conversation and move on, or if someone is a bit more interesting. So I think if you're interested in people, then you see them. And everyone's just very, very different, and everyone has their story, absolutely everyone. Mm-hmm. And if we talk about a hierarchical structure, every company needs its hierarchical structure, but there's one level that we're all exactly the same, and that's as human beings. So, and I know that I didn't have to train myself to be, I just believe in this. It's just a basic respect for people. And so how I will speak to anyone, and I think from people, what people have said is how that's filtered down through organizations I've led. It just goes through the whole companies. We talk on a level with absolutely everyone. And then of course, when we work, we respect a hierarchy. So there are managers, but if we think about, it actually leads me to such an important point, is servant leadership.
Yeah.
It's so important. Is understanding that if you are a leader, whatever that means, it's about the thing you're leading. It's about, if you're leading a company, it's about the company you're leading. If you're leading a country, it's about the country you're leading. It's not about you. You're actually irrelevant beyond your capabilities to perform that task. And if we think about it, you talk about countries. If you're leading a country, I mean, the idea of public service, it's in the name, public service. Well, how many national leaders are actually putting their country and the people in their country before themselves? I mean, these days in the democratic world, we have huge issues with that, of course. In fact, that's one of the reasons, you know, I do a lot of, have a lot of communication with the UAE these days. I think last time I was there with my son, who's 20, he was blown away by he saw the autobiography of Sheikh Mohammed of the ruler of Dubai. And it's the title was something like 50 years of reflection after 50 years of service. And because I've been to Dubai many, many times, and I understand their leadership ethos, and my son looked at me, coming from Israel, huge democracy, which has far too many political parties, very, very difficult to manage the country. We're about to head into our fifth election in 3 years soon because things just get blown up here. It's crazy. But he was blown away by this. He goes, look, Dad, look how they look at it over here. It's service. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what you're there for. If you're a leader, you're there to serve. But the fact that he was surprised at that, and it made me think, yes, this is what it is. It's not, you're in a position of responsibility to serve others. And the same thing, if you're leading a company, that's what you're there for. And if you're at the moment, and human beings are strange creatures, you know, we get a bit, you know, it's all about the ego. And sometimes you think, well, I just want myself on that front cover. Or if you are the CEO, you normally are on that front cover, or your name is in lights or whatever. Don't get confused. It's not actually about you. It's about the thing you're leading. Because as soon as you're not the CEO, then it will be about the next guy. And that just proves that it's not about you particularly. And I think that if you understand that, and if you internalize that, then you will treat people on the same level, and you will embrace that position as something of responsibility for others. I have no idea which question I answered, but anyway, I've been babbling for a couple of minutes about this.
No, it's so good. It's so good. And there's something that I read about, you know, if you're going to be in that seat, it's like, if you don't care about the people, then you have no business hiring them. If you don't care about the people, if you're not there to serve them, then you have no business being in that seat of leadership. And, you know, I think the first time I read that, it rang so true to me. It was so simple, but I think there's a lot of people who, I call it hogging a seat of leadership. You know, when it's like, because to your point, it's this wanting the, you know, the ego gets involved, all of those things. And it's almost, those are the things that are the motivators rather than, you know, the people. So I think, you know, again, when, as I see you talk about it, and I see, you know, I say I see because I haven't witnessed your leadership firsthand, but, you know, it is very much this authentic way of operating. And you gave the description of how you actually ran an organization. So that, you know, I pause to say these things so that as people are listening to this, these are, I think, great takeaways, great examples that, because I would imagine that most people who are tuning in are somewhere along their journey of leadership. So these are nice nuggets for people to, you know, take away and think about in their own journey.
Well, I mean, I hope so. And let's not imagine for a second that I have always been this fantastic leader, and I am, you know, I make plenty of mistakes as well. And I've pissed off people on my journey, and I've made, you know, not always been, you know, sometimes the way you sum up my words makes me come across like this absolutely perfect leader. No, 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 no. I don't want anyone to think that that's the case, but I have my ethos and I hope to stick to it.
Yeah. And I think that actually that's part of the beauty. And I think that it's important for me and why I created this platform is so much because I want to be able to elevate the voices of leaders such as yourself that are authentic in that journey. And that does mean that we're not perfect in it and we're making mistakes and we're learning from it. And that's part of why I ask people to come on and share, because it's not that we're, you know, people who are in these positions or come on the show are like sitting in ivory towers. You know, it's like, you know, again, it's a journey that we're learning and leading. And I think that's part of why I appreciate when you post on LinkedIn that I read, like, you know, and I'm gonna ask you about these things in a minute, but you gave people an example of a book you read about why CEOs fail. And, you know, I loved what, and actually I'll pause there. And I remember you wrote about it and you were like, you actually read something in there and you could see yourself in some of these things. You actually, again, put that mirror up to yourself after leading, I think you said like 18 companies. So
I've been a CEO for 18 years, let's say.
Oh, 18 years.
And that would be bad if I just switched company every year. That would be poor.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I would love for you to talk a little bit about, like, you know, maybe what was one of the takeaways from that book that you were like, either, you know, wow, you had really learned from, you know, maybe, you know, your experience in a certain role.
Yes. I mean, I really like the book. The way it's structured is each chapter deals with a character trait that you might have as a CEO that can be, that can totally derail you and your company. And so I looked just through the index at the start before I actually read. I'm looking through the index, and each chapter is entitled with that character trait. So, for example, there's like arrogance. You think you're always right and no one else is. Okay. Now, I think that maybe when I was very, very young, I was a bit like that, but I'm certainly not like that for many, many years. I was thinking, oh, phew, not me. But then I look and I go, melodramatic. You like to grab the center of attention. I'm like, yeah, sometimes me, yeah. And then what each chapter goes into is how, and this is the important thing is that, and someone said this to me recently, is that a weakness is so often just an overdone strength. Mm. And that's really interesting because let's take the, because I'm definitely someone who I like to be the center of attention. I definitely, you know, in the middle of the party and things like that. That's just how I always have been. And I like that. And it's a strength. But when it can be too much, it becomes a weakness, without a doubt. And just in life, but let's just talk about business for a second. If you're not giving other people that room to be the center, sometimes you have to sit on the side and let people be the center. And so it's where your strength can become a weakness. So when I'm looking down this list and I'm saying, yeah, I can be a bit like that. Mm, I can be a bit like that too. Mm, I can be a bit like that too. And I was like, wow, this is. And so the chapters then go into that, and then it's part of you. It's not like they're saying change this, but try and contain it so it doesn't derail you. Mm-hmm. So there was one, now that I'm thinking about it now, there was one of the chapters was on being mischievous. Okay. Now, I didn't immediately think of myself as mischievous, but the way they described it made me think, yeah, that can be me, is that you think that, you know, you can bend the rules. You think rules, you know, rules are just a suggestion sort of thing. Now, if you're in an early stage startup, sometimes being a little bit like that is a massive strength. You have to sort of, you know, shove yourself through the window when someone kicks you out the front door, and you have to make things happen. If you just live in a box, you're never going to create something that's really disruptive. So, and again, I'm not advocating breaking rules here, but sometimes that character trait with me has been a massive strength. But again, in another circumstance, when you've got a mature company, and just if it's part of you that loves to push the boundaries a little bit, that can derail you. And being aware of that is what this book was all about. It was saying, you know, I'm not trying to change you. It's like, okay, be aware and know when to put that in a box and say, mischievous Daniel, you're not here now. And that was really, really important. And again, coming back to the fact, it's not like strengths over here, weaknesses over there. They're very intertwined. Yeah. And that statement weaknesses are just overdone strengths has stayed with me since someone told me that. And it's a very important takeaway, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it's this self-awareness and this journey of constantly improving and constantly learning just keeps coming to me as you're talking about all this. And as people are listening to this, I think that's something in itself to think about, you know, how much am I doing those things and can I stand to do more of those things? And, you know, I think, again, this can be part of how we continue to evolve and make ourselves better, you know, and not be the person that's in the ivory tower thinking that they're so perfect, you know? So, and I'll ask you to talk about another example that you gave, which was the, when you listen to your voice on the WhatsApp, when you left a message for someone. I love this because actually, so I often, when I'm talking with people, I'm in meetings, I have this trick. I don't really know where I learned it, but I literally listen for my own voice. And for me, that's because that's my cue. If I hear my start to hear myself too much, I'm like, whoa, I'm talking too much. I'm dominating the conversation where I need to your point, like step back, put somebody else forward. And so anyway, yours is a bit different, but I just love the whole concept of like that awareness to listen to your voice. So tell us about that.
Oh God, you put me on the spot with this one. Okay. so, you know, whenever we hear ourselves back in recordings, it's a normal thing, unless you're a singer or an actor, you don't often hear yourself, you know? Yeah. So normally when you grow up, you hear, oh my God, do I really sound like that? You know, our voices are different in our heads to how other people hear them. And that's true, not only of the sound of the voice, but also the intonation sometimes. And I talk about my wife quite a lot on this call so far, but like the number of times you go, you should hear the way you sound, she'll say, you know, that you, and I'm like, I didn't sound aggressive or whatever. And she goes, you should hear yourself. It's something, you know, there's these things sometimes you should hear the way you sound. Anyway, so this was a WhatsApp interchange I had. I'm not going to give too many details because it would give away who. I was in, you know, in the middle of a lot of things, and the other person had done something that I didn't think was the right thing to do, but it wasn't a huge thing. And I was just in the middle of a million things. I was just sending voice messages instead of typing because I couldn't be bothered to type, okay? Which also, you know, is maybe an indication of not being that, I don't know, respectful, because it's like, it's easy for me and harder for the other person. When you send voice messages, it's easy for you, harder for the other person. So maybe that a little bit of selfishness on that side. So I was sending voice messages and rapid fire. And then about half an hour later, I wanted to check what had been done. And I went back to the conversation and I listened to myself and I was horrified. I was horrified. I sounded horrible. I sounded aggressive. I just sounded unpleasant. Like all the things that we barely know each other, but I guarantee you, I'm generally a very pleasant guy. Okay. Yeah. I just did not sound like myself at all, but obviously it was me.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize, I knew I was a bit impatient, but I didn't realize how unpleasant I sounded. And that shocked me. It really did. Mm. And so I called the person and I explained and apologized. And they told me that occasionally I'm like that. And it was a real mirror for myself. And I would not have known if I hadn't listened back to my messages.
Yeah.
So that's the story you wanted to hear. Anyway.
Yeah. No, again, and because it's like, I think that, you know, again, as people who are on this journey, it's really helpful, I find, and as I'm hearing in your story as well, to have these checks and balances for ourselves and not always rely on or think that somebody else is going to like say, why did you leave me the message that way? Well, maybe that person would have never said that to you, but you know, those checks and balances of like, what is the mirror that we can put up in front of ourselves to go like, how am I doing? Oh God. And then the fact that you actually called the person and you were like, yikes, my intention was, that wasn't my intention. And you know, like hold ourselves accountable. And again, like these are things that I just appreciate so much, the conversation around it. And that part of, you know, leadership. Cause again, I think there's just oftentimes this like mystery of how do people become effective in their roles as leaders and how do you operate? And so, you know, I just appreciate being able to talk about some of these things so that again, people can go, oh gosh, what is a little tool or trick that I could have in my toolbox as I go about my day?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the word accountability. I mean, it's huge, it really is. I think that, you know, I'm gonna sound like an old guy now, I say the younger generation these days. there's less and less accountability and it drives me nuts. You know, it's as if like, there's always a reason externally why something's not working for them. Generally, I'm talking very generally here.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I see it in organizations, and I'm trying to get into a mindset that says, okay, it's a different generation, different challenges and whatever, but accountability is a bit lacking here. It's like something didn't work for them because of something. It's like nothing's personal to them and they own it and take responsibility for something that's happening. Even if it's an external thing, then change your life, do what you can. And there's a, I see it sometimes a lack of accountability in the younger generation. One of the other things you've mentioned that I wanted to talk about as well is we've got to remember that we're very different people, all of us. And like you say, it's good to put checks and balances in place. Well, if it was someone else who's, let's say, lacking confidence in themselves, I'm blessed with confidence. Someone who's lacking confidence in themselves, putting too many checks and balances could turn them into a complete, you know, neurotic person, you know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's not like there's one size fits all for how to change whatever you are. We're very individual people. So yes, checks and balances, but depending on who you are. So if like, if you've got someone who's like charging around like a bull, put some restraints on them. If you've got someone who's just wandering around in life, you know, give them a kick up the butt. And, you know, it depends who the person is and who you are. And that's why understanding who you are is so important, because then you can understand what helps you to grow, which is not necessarily the same for your neighbor. So yes, someone like me, checks and balances all the time. Otherwise I could go all over the place.
Yeah, totally. But when you were talking about that dynamic of, you know, now I'll do the, I'm an old person, you know, the younger generation and that element of accountability, it also brings me to something that I read that you posted was a quote about, and I'm reading it, is to always be stronger than my excuse. Yes. And I loved when you read that, because I think that, you know, again, that element where, you know, I didn't know that saying, but I work to keep in front of me, like, again, kind of like hearing myself or observing if I feel like I'm starting to make an excuse, which may be like finding fault in other someone else first, where it's like, well, wait a second. I try to think of, has my role contributed to something? And the way I'm approaching something, is that contributing to the dynamic before I often, you know, because I do think that sometimes that pointing fingers at other people type thing can be an excuse. So now to your point about having to be careful about how far you swing on the pendulum, sometimes we can, you know, you also don't want to go into like constantly blaming yourself and overlearning from, you know, situations. So again, all these things in moderation, folks who are listening. But tell me a little bit about where did that quote come from, and what does it mean to you?
So it's, this is a quote that means a hell of a lot to me, to be honest, but just before I tell you the background to it. So being stronger than your excuse for me doesn't necessarily mean blaming myself instead of blaming the outside world. It means just being stronger than any of those things anyway. So the world hasn't given me my pay rise, be stronger than that anyway. Don't blame my lack of promotion on something else, that something has happened. I've got to keep going. That's the idea behind it. Now, the inspiration behind this is an amazing person who Sheto Tesfu is his name. He Ethiopian immigrant into Israel, which people who live in Israel know that it's not easy for the Ethiopian community here. Their integration into society has not been simple. And they're always up against it, so to speak. And so, you know, they've got a difficult start already. So you can immediately say, oh, well, I've got a difficult start. You know, it's because of that I can't get a job. It's because of that I'm not moving forward in life. And this guy insisted with himself. I think he came to Israel when he was about 5 or 8, something like that, when he was a young kid. And he insisted with himself I never met him, but I know the story, which is a tragic one, unfortunately. So he insisted with himself that he was going to make it anyway. And one of the things about making it in this country is there's conscription. You have to go into the army when you're 18. Now, there are millions of roles in the army, from pen pushing roles to senior combat officers to intelligence units, as you can name it. And some of the roles you have to work really hard to get it. And he made it a goal of his to, you know, work hard and become a good combat soldier and maybe an officer. And he got into those roles, which is hard for anyone. But with his background, it's even harder You know, the playing field is not the same for everyone, which is why I don't like this lie that it's like, oh, yes, you can. No, the playing field is not the same for everyone. If I come from a middle-class background and I had privileges, that made it easier for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not the same for everyone. And so he came from a difficult background and overcame those and got into that position. Now, unfortunately, very tragically, he was killed in an accident, not even in combat, but in an accident while he was serving. And they searched his barracks after, you know, after the funeral, and they found his notebook, which was full of pearls of wisdom. The guy was 21 when he was killed.
Oh, wow.
And it was just full of incredible pearls of wisdom, of self-affirmation and motivation to be able to be the best he possibly could be. And the, my favorite was, he's got this, you can see it handwritten, it's been published, where, and it's written in Hebrew. So, and he's written, be stronger, to be stronger than my excuse. And then at some stage, he obviously put an indent to always be stronger than my excuse. And this is what he lived by. And soldiers in his unit have tried to, you know, keep his memory and his legacy alive through these quotes and everything. And they've raised a charity. And it's very difficult because it's very, you know, very focused. But it's really looking at how to bridge between communities and people that have lesser chances in life and give them those chances through these examples. Be stronger than your excuse. So that's the background to it. It's, and when people ask me, what's my inspiration? He's my inspiration more than so many people. It's a 21-year-old kid who tragically was killed in an accident, but he overcame things, and there was no excuse that was going to prevent him. You know, oh, you're an Ethiopian immigrant. You can't, you know, there's no point going for that unit in the army. Might as well go for something a bit less. No. Going to go for it anyway. Going to be stronger than my excuse. Amazing.
Wow. That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that one. And as I'm watching the clock, because we said, before we started, I could just keep talking and talking all day. So I'm going to go to one more, which is right behind you, which I love. And I noticed it the first time that we talked, which is the Michael Jordan wings poster, which I literally have, and I tried to bring it out, but I didn't get around to it. I have it from, it was on my wall. As I was growing up as a little kid, I don't know if I told you I played basketball coming up. I played basketball in college anyway. So like, I love it. And it has it's Michael Jordan, it's wings, and it has the William Blake, quote on it that says, right. I think it's, no bird soars too high if he soars with its own wings.
Beautiful. Exactly. There you go. Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I think back to it. I don't think I really had any frame of reference to really understand what that meant, but I knew it meant something big. And, you know, he was such an icon to me. But I love that you have that. I always think of it. So tell us what that means to you and why you have it on your wall.
Well, Michael Jordan is without a doubt, you know, some people like him, some people hate him, whatever. A lot of people love him, but his impact on the world of sport, not just in basketball, was enormous. You can't argue that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are a few people of that stature that had, it's not just about how he played sport. It was the way he carried himself. It was the way he represented himself, his team, his country, or didn't sometimes. You know, there were a number of examples, but, you know, people like Muhammad Ali, that level of character that brought so much through sport. And that's my whole career sport. For me, everything that I try and do is to try and, you know, I know this sounds a little bit, you know, wishy-washy, maybe visionary, but like, I'm hoping to impact people's lives through sport. It's more than sport for me. And in fact, my new venture is looking at exactly doing that. It's using soccer to help impact people's lives. And Michael Jordan impacted people's lives. His story is incredible. And so I love the idea of Jordan. And the poster itself, which if you get it life-size like I've got, I mean, it's like this, his span of his arms holding a basketball in one hand. It's just the immensity of it. It's just,
yeah,
it's incredible. So I love it. But I have to say that as a Brit, basketball is not that big a thing growing up. And that poster over there is actually more significant to me personally. And no one will ever notice that because it's a bit in the background, but I will actually bring it.
Now, by the way, my husband is a Brit and we call it football in our house as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad you do. So being an American, you might not actually recognize the people on that.
No, I don't actually.
So that is a very famous picture from the 1970 World Cup, a game between England, who were the then champions. They won in 66, and Brazil, one of the best Brazilian teams ever. And Brazil won. And that picture is between Pelé, the iconic Brazilian, of course, and the captain, Bobby Moore, who later became Sir Bobby Moore. And Sir Bobby Moore was, obviously Pelé is the star, but Sir Bobby Moore was obviously an English star back then as well. And he encapsulated for the whole country a combination of professionalism, gentlemanliness, integrity. And it comes across in that picture. I mean, he's just lost 1-0 and he's gone straight up to Pelé and they had a personal one-on-one battle throughout the game. Which a lot of people say, I mean, who cares? We lost the game. But they say that the individual battle was won by Bobby Moore. Does it matter? I don't know. It's a nice story. But he was and that was why he was also knighted, became a sir later on, because he was such an amazing character. So growing up as a Brit and football being my first sport, that actually is a close poster to my heart. This is a lovely poster to have on the wall that probably for you is more meaningful than it is for me. But I explain why I love Jordan anyway.
Yeah. No, it's so great. And you know, as we're closing up here, I've got one more question for you to kind of close out the whole thing. But I just want to stress here is that part of the reason why I structured this conversation the way I did is I often talk about that leadership is a practice and authentically, intentionally leading is a practice. And so as a practice, there's things that we are constantly learning from ourselves, our experiences, other people. And again, that's why I asked you specifically about these stories that you've told and these quotes that you have and like that you'll reference, you write about them, things that you literally have on your walls. And so I say these things for those, you know, for the listeners that, again, these are things that we're constantly practicing and striving to remind ourselves, to catch ourselves, these checks and balances, as we talked about earlier. And it can be to the degree that's, as we talked about, to the degree that resonates with each person, because everybody needs something different. And that's also something I try to make sure that we're keeping out in front of ourselves on this platform, is that there's no one, it's not a universal like solution for everyone. So we get a smattering of examples and people and stories and nuggets, I'll call them, so that we can figure out what will truly work for ourselves on our journeys. So with all of that, I just want to ask one last thing, which is, you spent almost an hour with us generously. Thank you again. And if there's one or two takeaways that you would love to make sure that the audience gets from your episode, what would that be?
More takeaways than we've got so far.
I know. But that's why I asked, because we talked about so many things. But as people are what's the thing that you'd like people to take away from this?
I think an important one that we sort of touched on a bit before is that that is so important to realize is that everything is very, very individual, and what suits you is going to be a combination of what you learn from him, from her, from them. And that's why you get wiser over time, because you interact with more and more people. And so you can learn little bits from everyone that comes along your way. You shouldn't ever try and emulate 100% one person. You've got to try and take something from them and incorporate it into your own character. And so understanding that you're picking up things all the time is so critical. Understanding that most of what you'll pick up is from people is critical. Understanding that, you know, the older you get, the more you realize there's not really that much right and wrong. Of course there is, but it's less and less black and white the older you get. It's much more about perspective. And the more you can put yourself in the person opposite you, into their shoes, and understand what they're going through. That could be your friend, your wife, your colleague, your boss, doesn't matter. If you can put yourself in their shoes and understand how they're seeing the world, because their view is going to be different, the better off you'll be, because then you'll be able to communicate with that person better. You're not just shouting your message to them while they shout their message back to you. And so that, I think, is absolutely critical. And that's something that I think I've had to learn, because I think as a young man, I was very, I know what I'm doing. You know, I know it all. And it took my, you know, again, talk about that first failure when I was 23, 24 years old. It taught me that I don't. And that's great. So, understanding that everyone has their perspective, I think that's something that is really important to take away.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to finally have our first one-on-one conversation. And I'm just honored to be on the path with you. And thank you so much. And everybody, thanks for listening today. Have an amazing day and follow Daniel on LinkedIn.